As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It's Monday, April 22nd. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris, back here with you on this episode. We've got some news and notes from the weekend. We've got fresh starting pitcher rankings from Eno that dropped the day after he went to fish at the Sphere. So we'll talk about some of the biggest movers on
all the work
that
was
list.
Done.
People were, I saw the responses when you posted that. They're like, he's at the show last night. The rankings dropped today. Legend. And I'm just laughing to myself. I'm like, do you think he did the rankings after the show? Because, come on.
I did finish them in a casino while a friend of mine was gambling. So
you were, okay, so you were up in the room. You were not at the table.
No, I was downstairs, but yeah, I was working. The thing that happens at the end of the rankings is that I've been looking at them for three, four, five days, two weeks. You know, like I've been looking at them forever and I've been moving this guy. He must be, yeah, I got to move him up. I got to move him down. Oh, I got to, would I really take this guy over that guy? Nah, you know, like I'm just looking at them and constantly sorting them and sorting them and sorting them. And, you know, I'll do things where I like the beginning, I like put players in big chunks. So I'm like, these guys are 50s and that's a 30 and he's a 20, you know, like put them in chunks. And then I get into it like, oh no, these guys got. So, but there's just a moment where I'm like, okay, I just have to turn in. I just have to here. I could keep, you know, shuttling them around, but here you go. And of course, as soon as they publish, I'm like, oh, Noah Kelly has a what?
Yeah, there's that factor. Yeah, that's a tough one.
I just put these in, or they'll like call up somebody and be like, I feel like, where's Bobby Blonde? I'm like, I didn't know he was up, you know.
Time is a factor. How was the show, by the way?
It was crazy. I mean, this is the Sphere, is this huge venue. We had 18,000 people in there, and the screen is just bigger than any IMAX, any screen I've ever seen. And for some of the songs, it was surprisingly boring what they were putting up on the screen. But from what I gather, you know, it's kind of hard to ask a band to like have a show that's just for one venue, you know, like to have a bespoke show for this one place that has a huge screen. And so, you know, they did do that to some extent for this, but I have a feeling that year three or four they're really going to nail it, because they will have had the experience of being there for a while. And a couple of songs, you know, they had visuals that were interacting with the song as it was going in really interesting ways that were pretty far out. So that I was like, if they could just do more of that and like, you know, use the venue more. Like for one song, they had these actual lanterns come out in front of the screen, and then the screen itself had lights going into the background. So it was like you were in front of a lake with reflecting lights, and these lanterns were up, but there was like a 3D aspect to it. So I could see them really leaning into that combination of the screen and some 3D aspects. So it was I would say it was really fun. It was mind blowing. I want to go back, but I might want to give them a year or two to figure it out.
The 11th Eno clone still trapped inside the sphere, wandering around, trying to figure out how it all works, where it's all plugged in. He's happy. I'm sure he'll be fine. Be sure to hit the like button on this video and subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't done so already. We'll start today with some news and notes. Spencer Strider, we learned over the weekend, had internal brace procedure on his elbow, so not a second Tommy John surgery. Last had Tommy John back in 2019 when he was in college. Interesting thing about the Strider diagnosis, though, is that it was a loose bone fragment that actually caused the problem. It wasn't just a typical tear of the UCL.
Yeah, I guess apparently, and this can happen, they thought that the tip of his elbow had just broken off. And that literally is a thing that happened. I think that's what happened to Yu Darvish before. That's where Yu Darvish had a stress reaction. So they're like, you can actually stress the ligament so much, it's pulling at that bone. I mean, it's attached to that bone. So like, you can have a stress reaction, stress fracture. You can have a bone chip come off of your elbow due to just repetitive stress down there. But once there is a bone floating around there, it you can't see exactly when you're looking at the MRI, you can't see if something is torn or not. So the bone fragment, when they looked at the MRIs, they're like, well, there's a bone fragment, you know, and we don't know what it is. And it had apparently been a piece of calcium that had developed over time as a reaction to the stress. Once that broke off, they thought it was original bone, but it was actually sort of a stress reaction type of a deposit, a calcium deposit that looks like bone fragment. They'll call it a bone fragment. But because they couldn't see what was going on, when they got in there and moved the bone, they were like, oh, well, the ligament's actually in decent shape. And when you don't have the full tears, you can do the brace. And the brace is you'll say 6 to 8 months, but I think it's more like we'll get you back on the field in 12. Whereas TJ, they say it's 12 months, but you get back on the field in like 14 plus.
Yeah, so. I think it's possible we'd see Strider on opening day, but at the very least, it's more like a calendar year from the time we last saw him pitch, yeah. Like you said. So it instead of being a delayed like June, July, like 2025 return.
Robbie Ray had full TJ a year ago, and like he's not about to return.
Right. Strider had a lot of questions he was being asked about the increase in injuries, and part of his answer was like, well, I don't have 3 hours to answer all these questions right now. But I think Strider seems like a very thoughtful person about the craft, and I think there'd be a lot to dig into with him, but I think the critiques are that he throws so hard. He's one of those guys that sits close to his max, and a lot of people, you know, we worry about that being something that does cause injuries because we're seeing strong links to that, but it's not the only thing that causes pitchers to get hurt. And that's what I think people lose sight of that every single time we talk about pitching injuries. Well, he did this. It's like, well,
oh yeah,
he also did these other things.
He added
that
a curveball,
contributing factor.
TJ right. City.
Yeah, it's just super. It's
how many
it's
other
dumb.
People added curveballs? How many people throw curveballs? Like what?
It's silly, and I think what's also silly is we've talked about this idea a week or so ago. I think it was last Monday. We were talking about, well, maybe people are going to back away from the guys that sit too close to their max. Okay, fine, but
buy up all the Merrill Kelly shares.
Get all the Merrill Kellys because that'll work. He's got a Terry's major strain. He's already had one MRI. He's going to have another MRI as a follow up on Monday, which never seems good. Two MRIs always seems like a longer sort of absence is expected.
Not twice the fun.
No, I've never had an MRI. I would love to complete life to its full potential without having one. That would be a successful outcome.
I had one for a health thing, and I came out of there like, we think you're all right, except for this one thing in your nose. And then I looked it up and I was like, holy crap. You know, if it is that, you know, that's a big deal, you know? And I went into this thing and like 5 seconds into the thing, he's like, you don't have nose cancer. You're all right. But the MRI itself sucks because like when I had it on my head, you stick your whole head in there and then you can't move and it's just white. Like you're just looking at a white machine. You're just sticking your head into a white machine hole. You know, like there's no, like, you can't move. If you get claustrophobic at all, it sucks. There's just like one little sort of beeping noise and you just have to sit there for like 15 minutes. It's really crappy. I guess with an elbow, at least your head's not in there probably, but
yeah. Depends on the machine, I guess. Depends on the design. But anyway, the Diamondbacks rotation is a little banged up all of a sudden because Ryan Nelson has already joined Eduardo Rodriguez on the IL. I assume this Merrill Kelly situation turns into an IL stint in the next couple of days. It's just a question of, you know, how they're going to set that up. But when you look at their depth, this is one of the weaknesses of the Diamondbacks. They don't have that next wave of starting pitchers ready to go. It's maybe taking someone like, you know, Logan Allen, who's working in their bullpen, and making him a temporary starter because you got Gallen, you got Montgomery, you got Fott, Slade Ciccone's on the roster right now. Am I overlooking any depth guys, or am I right to be skeptical of some of those younger options they're going to have to turn to as they try to work through these injuries?
I mean, Slade Ciccone? Ciccone?
Ciccone.
Well, I just looked up two C's in Italian is Ch.
Yeah.
So, but there's not, it's not Ciccone. It's Ciccone.
Ciccone.
So I think it's Ciccone. That's what I'm going with. Ciccone. Looks okay. He's got two good breaking balls at least. And I think he can function as a depth guy that comes in and at least gives you around league average production. You know, so that's one way to paper over it. I don't know. I wouldn't say that they can afford a bunch of injuries. I don't even know who the next name is up. I guess this says, oh, I don't like Tommy Henry that much. Tommy Henry?
He's usually the first go-to, schedule permitting, when they need someone.
Yeah, I'm not that big a fan of him. And Bryce Jarvis is kind of already in the bullpen. And even when he pitches, he throws like more sliders than he throws fastballs. Christian Mayna, we'll see.
Acquired from the White Sox. So kind of interested to see what they're able to do with him. Yeah.
But some decent strikeout numbers in the minors. So I guess Christian Mayna is like someone to look for, you know, when he comes up. I've got somewhere AAA numbers that he might be on. Let me see here. What is their rotation right now?
It's Gallen, Montgomery, and Fott. With the assumption that Kelly's going to the IL, Nelson's already there, and Erod's now on the 60-day IL.
So, Slade Ciccone and Tommy Henry are in right now. Christian Mayna has an 85 stuff plus in AAA.
All right, that's not going to do it. How about Blake Walston? Get numbers on Blake Walston? His walk rate's been through the roof. He got to AAA all of last season there. And
69 stuff plus.
That is not nice. It's a problem because he's walking a lot of guys and it doesn't look like it's a big league arsenal. We've talked about the difficulty of Reno in the past as one of the more challenging PCL environments to pitch in, but that doesn't scream instant relief for the bullpen or for the rotation.
No, it doesn't. And it does make you wonder about their pitching development in general.
Yeah. It's a little bit light at this time. So we'll see if they find someone interesting, but if they do, it's not obvious who that pitcher is based on what we're seeing to this point. Some other injury news to get through real quick. Francisco Alvarez out 6 to 8 weeks. He had surgery on the UCL in his thumb. Kind of a big deal. I mean, it's going to put Omar Narvaez and Tomas Nito into the lineup on a regular basis, probably in some kind of tandem at this stage of his career. I'm not sure Narvaez is more than a 3 or 4 day a week sort of starter. And once Alvarez comes back, and we're talking about early June, mid-June probably for that timetable to actually play out. I always worry with thumb injuries that power doesn't come back right away. And surprisingly, Alvarez wasn't really showing much power early on anyway. Just one homer in 16 games, .364 slug to this point after popping 25 homers as a rookie last season.
Yeah, I think it was going to come. I was just happy that a little bit of a reduction in the strikeout rate. Yeah, I guess a 110 max EV is a little bit lower than he had last year, and the barrel rate was definitely down. Definitely too many ground balls, but I think it's a little bit about pitch selection. He has a little bit of a hole high in the zone, and so he's trying to figure out how to develop maybe a flatter swing that can get that high pitch. So there's a little bit of just adjusting and adjusting back going on. I remain pretty upbeat about this guy.
Yeah, I like him long-term a lot. If you're in a keeper dynasty situation, kind of looking to the future, this might be a window where, hey, you've got an older veteran catcher right now and something else that the team that has Alvarez wants. Maybe this is a good time to trade for him because the second half could still be a good, productive one for one of the game's best power-hitting young catchers. The interest over the weekend seemed to be in Travis d'Arnaud because Travis d'Arnaud did nothing but hit homers over the weekend. He had four in the series against the Rangers, three of them on Friday night alone. He's playing a lot right now because Sean Murphy's on the IL. I think it's funny only because when we talked about the Atlanta catching situation, we were both really high on Murphy, and part of the reason was that we didn't think d'Arnaud had anything left in the tank. So I love that he's proving us wrong in this window while Murphy's out. Like, no, he's still good enough. He's certainly helping right now, kind of filling the void of a number one catcher very capably.
I think he's on a list with Gary Carter as, you know, one of the very few catchers that has multiple four home run games, but
yeah, three homer games. Yeah, Johnny Bench, I think, was the other one. Yeah, just good company for sure for Travis d'Arnaud.
Topped out at 18 for the season in 2022. So
totally.
I mean,
makes
I love
sense.
Baseball though. You know, like. I don't think he's this good, right? Like he topped out at 18. Like, what are you expecting out of him this year? You know, I think he's going to return to being mostly a backup when Sean Murphy's back up. But, you know, that's something that's cool about baseball. And it's something like that can happen for any kind of player.
He hit 225 with a 288 OBP and a 397 slug last year. So I'm still keeping my expectations in check, even though he had an amazing weekend against the Rangers. Speaking of the Braves, Ozzie Albies actually already shed his walking boot and he's taking grounders already. So it sounds like that toe injury that popped up on him last week is going to be a relatively short absence.
Yeah. There was some thought that he might even come back sometime this week, but it's most likely next week.
Eligible to come off the IL on Friday. So much, much better news than expected there. Tristan Cassis landed on the IL with a rib strain. Seems like things are starting to really pile up on the Red Sox with all the stuff they've been dealing with. Rib strain is the injury, though, for Cassis. Left Saturday's game with discomfort. And you always worry it's kind of like an oblique or something that you really need for rotation. And that something like this can end up being more of like a month-long sort of absence. I have not seen a timetable yet, but Alex Cora responded with a yes when asked if he was concerned about a lengthy absence. So if you have Cassis and you didn't make plans this weekend for some long-term replacements, this would be a good time to start looking.
I mean, rib strain, I don't know what the difference is between that and like an adductor or oblique situation. It's all, I think, a sort of continuum up and down the ribs there and into the nether regions. But all of that is due to, you know, baseball being a rotational sport and wanting to turn the body fast. And so the thing that really sucks about it, and I talked to Lars Nootbaar about this with his cracked ribs, is that you just have to wait till it doesn't hurt and then wait another day and then, you know, try to do your baseball stuff. And if it hurts again, you have to sit down and wait another couple weeks.
Very, very frustrating injury to try to work back from. I think initially the playing time increase probably goes to like Pablo Reyes or Bobby Dalbec. Like those are the bench guys they have right now. I don't know, though. I look at this team and I think, you know, maybe you could play Manuel Valdez at first base once Vaughn Grissom's back. Like it could be a pretty fluid situation. Brandon Belt's still out there as a free agent. Like if you're taking this season even remotely seriously and you're not getting production at first base or you got an injury like this, how do you not give Brandon Belt a call?
Yeah, and like how much better would this whole lineup and team work if Yoshida, you know, could play some first, you know? You know, I would try Yoshida there. I'd try Willy Abreu there. Neither one of those guys is great outfield defenders. And they are good bats, and they're way better bats than Dalbec and Reyes. So I wouldn't be surprised if you get some video soon of, like, you know, some people in Boston trying their hat at first base. William Abreu will be featured later on our Where the Money Went. But he was a big pickup this weekend because due to Sedan Rafaela playing some shortstop, Jaron Duren playing some center, Tyler O'Neill having a concussion, William Abreu played through the whole weekend. And he's kind of a fun player if he's going to get playing time, in that he makes consistent, powerful contact. It's, you know, I think he's going to run high batting averages and balls in play and be on the upper end of where his strikeout rate would have him. I think it's a good hit tool. And so I think he's a guy who's going to hit, you know, 240, 250 with, I think the kind of 20 home run power and some non-zero speed. Depending on how this first base situation shakes out, William Abreu could have playing time even once Tyler O'Neill returns, which is probably tomorrow. They're saying that Tyler O'Neill will probably be activated off the concussion IL on Tuesday.
Yeah, and Abreu started 7 straight games last week, so if they can find more playing time for him, it's extended runway based on what had been happening for him with the Red Sox. One more news item to get to: Frankie Montas likely to miss his next start. He got hit in the forearm by a comebacker on Sunday, so missing only one more start would be a pretty positive outcome given all the possibilities with something like that.
Yeah. And one nice thing about the Reds rotation as it stands is Nick Martinez is like this really interesting kind of, he's doing the same thing he did in San Diego. I thought that they were going to sign him and make him just a starter, but he's kind of a bulkish, you know, 6th starter on the active roster kind of player. And so I would assume that he's most likely to pitch 3 innings in the Montas start that he misses. That they might be able to get through it. I mean, they're finding guys. Fernando Cruz is fun. Emilio Pagan is good. Diaz is struggling a little bit in the closer role, but the bullpen is not terrible.
I've usually been pretty critical of that bullpen too.
Yeah.
It does seem a little better than it has been. Cruz is a good call. He just looks like he's got that nasty splitter. Nobody can do much with that, and he's been excellent so far. 9 appearances, 18 Ks in 9 innings already. He's just cruising, for lack of a better word, to this point. But yeah, I think Nick Martinez is that glue guy that sort of holds it together for the Reds.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's get to Eno's new starting pitcher rankings. We'll talk about some of the biggest risers and fallers, mostly focusing on the risers today. A couple of guys higher up on the list. Joe Ryan and Shota Imanaga jumping up into the 19 and 20 slots, so about 10-ish spots up, which with some injuries and other things going on, it's a pretty significant jump relative to where they are on the list. And We talked about Imanaga coming off his excellent debut against the Rockies a few weeks ago. He's finally allowed earned runs. It took him until his fourth big league start for that to happen. But excellent results so far. A 21-2 strikeout to walk ratio in 21 and a third innings. He's gone more than five innings in three of his first four starts. Had a tough matchup against the Dodgers that he sort of just held his own in. Only threw 43 pitches, but I think that was a rain delay. I don't think that was a performance-related thing. So what have you made of these last few looks we've had at Imanaga? Is it just a case where not only are people seeing this for the first time, but is the stuff even better than expected?
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff with a capital S and there's the stuff with the small S. And I think the small S stuff has been there for Imanaga, but like the capital S stuff, not really. Stuff Plus has not loved him. And I've even gotten some sort of private feedback that, you know, some people think the 102 Stuff Plus on Shota's fastball is too low. That's still good for a fastball. The fastball slider combo is really good. I think the splitter is being undervalued by this model. That is going to be a theme today that we are going to talk about, is the possible undervaluing of a couple splitters here. If you make that splitter more like league average, then Shota has above 100 Stuff Plus. What's interesting is that the Stuff Plus then drives the projections that we have. Shota and Joe Ryan's ERAs are the only ones over 4.2 in my top 30 in terms of projected. This is Jordan Rosenblum's projected ERAs using the PPERA, using Stuff Plus. I push them higher than my projections because I'm just saying, like, Shota looks like he has what he needs, like in terms of a fastball slider splitter combo. People are having a real hard time seeing it. He's a short guy, so it's like it comes in really flat, really good vertical approach angle on that. So I'm believing the strikeout minus walk rate, which is 24%. League average is 12%. I'm believing the incremental, like the pitch-by-pitch Stuff Plus. I'm believing some of the results. With Joe Ryan, we've seen that Stuff Plus never loved his fastball, but it always worked pretty well. And that this year he's added a splitter that once again, Stuff Plus doesn't love. Joe Ryan's splitter is a 96 Stuff Plus. However, and then slider doesn't love either, 99. However, just watching him, like, he has settled into this hard slider that he uses and the splitter. He trusts the hard slider, the sweeper, the splitter. You know, he now has like a larger array of pitches to go to. It's not always going to be the fastball high in the zone when he needs a called strike or whatever. So, you know, and then I look at 31% strikeout minus walk rate. And I just say, this is a guy who's always struck out a lot of guys, not walked many players. And now he's getting more comfortable in his secondary pitches. And that's going to be the way he avoids those homers that have always been the problem. It's not always just 100% model for me. You know what I mean? It's like these guys have full arsenals and are succeeding with them. And there's enough to like within it to say, I'm going to look past the iffy Stuff Plus numbers on these guys.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, I think the skills flaw for Joe Ryan has been predominantly struggles with homers, right? Like that's the thing that pulls him away from some of the ERA indicators over the years. Like you look at the gap between his ERA and his Sierra, oftentimes it's at least a half run. Sometimes it's even a full run like it was last year because of homers. But even with that flaw, he was still missing a ton of bats. He wasn't walking guys, and it was supported by high swinging strike rates. So if you add weapons to that, it makes sense to be more aggressive with Joe Ryan. I'm wondering if we're hitting a peak, like even with those adjustments, if he can actually move up much more.
No, I don't actually think so. I mean, he's throwing really close to his max than he ever has. So I don't think there's much more velo in there than 93.8. Hopefully he's kind of an athlete. He's like a water polo player. So I'm hoping that, you know, in terms of stress on his elbow, in terms of, you know, his injury outcomes, that that he's fine in that way. But I don't think that any one of his pitches is elite. And so therefore I hesitate to say, oh yeah, there's another, like he could win the Cy Young.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of a pitcher that looks really good and is really good for fantasy purposes, but also for real life purposes for the Twins. Let's talk about Reed Detmers. I got a lot of questions about Detmers. I stepped in on a Friday chat while you were away at the end of last week, and a lot of people are just wondering, you know, is this real? Has Reed Detmers actually turned a corner? Is the arsenal better? We've seen runs from him in the past where he looks like he's figuring it out, and then it sort of just unravels, and he goes back to being 24-25% K rate, slightly elevated walk rate, and kind of average home run rate in terms of skills, and the ratios kind of come out as league average. And it's frustrating because you keep thinking there probably is one more level there. And now that we're seeing it over another stretch here in April, the same questions are coming back. The one thing I was pointing out is I didn't really see enough of an uptick in velo to just say, oh, well, this is the reason. It's not really that. To me, it looks like he's just locating things better. Just, you know, if you're watching on YouTube, just take a look. If you're not watching on YouTube, at his Baseball Savant page, look at where he was throwing his pitches last year versus where he's throwing them this year. You'll see a lot more consistency, right? Four seamers at the top of the zone, sliders down and in to righties more consistently, where he was getting a ton of plate last year. He's not doing that as much this year. It just seems like everything's a little bit more crisp with where he's executing his pitches.
Yeah, there's some slight changes. This might be one of his better fastballs he's ever had, at least in terms of, you know, IVB, vertical break. He's showing the best vertical break on that. His slider was really successful when he was throwing it harder, and it was 89 last year. It's 85 this year, but at least 85 is still the magic number. 85 is the sort of threshold where breaking balls get better once they're over 85. So seeing him still above 85 with a slider is good news. I generally think of him as someone who just goes in and out a little bit. And when you point out to me like these like heat maps that I see, I bet you that in the bottom ones, which were last year, there were 3 or 4 week segments that look like the top ones. You know, in fact, when I look at those heat maps, the bottom ones could just gobble up all the top ones, right? Like it's not so different. It's just that the bottom ones are more robust, right?
Right. Yeah. You worry that like over time you would lose the tightness of those clusters because they're within the same ranges. That's one way to think about it for sure.
And I just think, you know, overall the issue with most of the Angels is there's only like one really good fastball in the Angels rotation.
Soriano?
Yeah. And everybody else's fastball is pretty bad. And sometimes they have good secondaries, and Detmers has good secondaries. Detmers might have the second best fastball in that rotation. We'll see. Chase Silseth.
Silseth, that's a tough name to say.
That screws me up. Chase may be there when he comes back. I'm still interested in Chase. Like years later, still interested, still watching. But he's hurt right now. So Detmers is, you know, he did go up in my ranks a lot because I was really skeptical before. And where did he go from and to? Let me see here. Thought he was on our list. Yeah, he went. I had 60, and he was 100 before. So he's moved into my top 60. He's definitely, you know, in that 60 to 75 range is, you know, what I would expect to be your last pitcher on a 12-teamer. Don't you think that Reed Detmers, that sounds like a perfectly credible last or second to last pitcher on a 12-team rotation?
Yes, absolutely. Like that's the level I think he has pitched at to this point in the season. The would you rather of the day is, which name would you rather have to pronounce correctly with a stadium of people watching you for $1 million? Slade Ciccone. Slade Ciccone, very hard to say that. Or Chase Silseth. Like, Oh my goodness. Definitely not Chase. Do not roll off the tongue.
I always want to put an H. I want to make it like Silsheth or Shilseth, or it's the SH in the middle of that. That screws me up.
The broadcaster's nightmare roster. We should assemble that at some point in time. Let's talk about Casey Mize for a bit. If you've watched him this year, you can tell he's not the same pitcher he was in previous opportunities in the big leagues with the Tigers. Like, the stuff just looks better. But if you look at the Fangraphs page, you see, oh, it's a 17.8% K rate. And ooh, it's a 7.6% swinging strike rate underneath that low K rate, which leads to an immediate question. Will the strikeouts be there going forward if we trust that the stuff is, in fact, a bit better for Casey Mize now in 2024?
There's a couple where there's a couple pitchers where, you know, we'll talk about today that you're just like, this has to work, right? It's like, it has to work. This is the kind of stuff that we're doing in pitch design sessions. This is like what teams, they're like, okay, you take this guy and you put this in and you create more IVB, or you do, you know, and then you come out the other side and you're a better pitcher, you know? And we haven't quite seen it from Mize. We've seen the changes in his arsenal. And what we've seen is that he added, he added vertical break on the four seamer. He went from below average, and over time he added 3 inches of vertical break on his four seamer. So that's a big difference. His slider, when he first came in the league, it was a cutter. And now he's, getting about 8 inches more drop on this power slider, as opposed to throwing a cutter that he was throwing before. You've got plenty of other changes. I mean, he's just, he's basically revamped his whole thing. He was kind of a sinker first guy when he first came up. This year he's not even throwing a sinker. So he's four seam, curveball, slider, and the split finger was his moneymaker all the way through. That's the one that hasn't changed much over time. Now, when you look, when he first came up in the big leagues in 2020, his vertical movement page on Baseball Savant is all blue, other than the split finger. And now in 2024, it's all red. So he's really, really changed what he's done. I mean, it's pretty remarkable to add that much vertical movement. I watch him because I was like, what is going on here? I think there's some old habits. Like, there's some old habits where he's like a sinker guy. And so he has to reshape his command and rethink his command and rethink his approach, because he's a new pitcher. He's a different pitcher now. So that's what I would blame it on. I would blame it on the kind of bumps in the road when you sort of refashion a pitcher I think you saw this with Yusei Kikuchi. Yusei Kikuchi now is the best version of himself, but at one point he changed all his pitches and didn't have good natural command, and he was awful for a little bit. He's throwing a lot of the same pitches that he threw when he was awful. He's just sort of, over time figured it out. One thing that there was a Tigers pitcher who had a great changeup and slider, but he didn't have great natural command when he started. And then over time, he added better command of the changeup and slider.
How long ago was this?
I mean, I interviewed him. He ended up on the Mets, I think. Anyway, this pitcher told me that you don't practice your secondary pitches as much in bullpens, and you can't always get to the same intensity in bullpens. And so that there's a natural ability to add secondary stuff over time. That just comes from practicing your pitches in the game. So like, no matter what you do in the bullpen, like Joe Ryan's splitter last year was fine in the bullpen. When he got into the game and threw it as hard as he could, it wasn't great. It was bad. So there's only so much you can do in practice environment. That's what I'm seeing with Casey Mize. He's taking his toys out into a non-practice environment, and he's figuring out how to get outs with it in the games, as opposed to in front of the track man, And I think it's going to work out. I don't know what the time frame is on that, though. Is it this year? Is it next year? I think he's like way better of a of an acquire for me in keeper leagues. Like, I think I will throw like a big old capital B buy on him in keeper leagues, where you might be able to get him because people who have invested in Casey Mize, you know, are look at like, oh, 17% strikeout rate. Like, this ain't working. Bad swing and strike rate. This is, he's about to get blown up. They can look at his projections and say he's projected for a 4.5 ERA by most systems. Well, not my system. I believe in him.
I think that's exactly what you have to play against when you're trying to make trades, since the things people are looking at when they're evaluating their own players are rest of season projections and same things we talk about on this show all the time. So you need something that's a little bit different that's actually going to lead you to take a chance on a player that someone else might be comfortable parting with. Let's talk about Javier Assad. And I think he came up maybe in a like a waiver preview a couple weeks ago. I'm still kind of surprised that you are as into Javier Assad as you seem to be. So a simple question, like, what do you like about him? He's been great so far. 2.11 ERA, 103 whip, 21 Ks, 21 and a third innings. So the results are fantastic, and it's easy to jump on board with anybody who's pitching like that for a handful of starts. But what is it that makes this work?
Yeah, I think that he's pushed his sinker forward. And so now against righties, he's pretty dominant in terms of, like, you know, sinker breaking ball. That's a good work against righties. And even Stuff Plus will agree that that should work against lefties. Yes, there's a question here, but I wanted to look at his pitch chart from Brooks here. You can ignore those red dots that are not all the way out to 10. Those are from years before. He's pushed that slider to more of a sweeper. So he's basically baby sweeper, curveball, cutter, four-seam, sinker, and changeup. This is why I like him. I mean, these are different pitches. They are he has refined them. He has three breaking balls that are very different from each other. And I think that just gives him a real chance to sort of mix and match his pitches and get by against lefties and dominate righties. That's the kind of package I see. It's got some similarities to other pitchers that have struggled, you know, that have that kind of sweeper sinker package as their basis. But he's showing more touch. And I think his cutter and sinker are pretty good. So his four seam may not be great. He's going to struggle against some lefties, but I see the package there for him to do great against righties and to just get by against lefties. And I think that deserves, you know, I put him 79. I'm not trying to like say he's a top 50 pitcher, but that's big up from 160. So I think he's a usable guy in most leagues. I might avoid throwing against the Dodgers or maybe in Cincinnati. I wouldn't want to throw him in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
May want to know which way the wind is blowing or how lefty the other team is, but otherwise, like, want to start him more than half the time.
Yeah, a regularly used starter from a guy that was previously like an NL only option is a pretty big move for the first month of the season. So I think that's probably the way to look at Assad at this point. Brady Singer getting more love on this show this season than I ever expected. Well, it wasn't all love, but it seems like it's at least trending in the right direction. Is he starting to make a little bit of a believer out of you with some of the adjustments he's made?
I don't know, man. We've got this chart up for Brady Singer, which is, so this doesn't have him on it. This is last year's heat map for four-seamers. But I just want you to imagine, you see where the gray line is, that's league average, and you never want to be there. League average is almost always in blue because that's where, you know, hitters are most trained to be. This is vertical movement against horizontal movement for four seamers. So take that gray line and then go down like three boxes. And when you get to that real dark blue, that's where Brady Singer's fastball is, his four seam fastball this year. It's enough of a new wrinkle that, you know, I think it's working in the short run. You know, he's got the best strikeout rate of his career. I think that's partially due to the sweeper that he's throwing. But at 91.9 miles an hour with basically dead on league average movement on the four seam and sinker, I'm just I just think that the fastballs aren't going to be good enough. You know, I just don't trust it.
Yeah, just for context, you've got him in the 90s at 92 in your rankings. So that's a little more
he moved up a lot, and I still don't like him. It's basically
still kind of a 50-50 start versus sit situation. I think being in the AL Central leaves the door open, though, for a few more streaming opportunities. That might be helping keep his value
there
afloat.
Are a bunch of people in my rankings around there that I found I had to. One of the hardest things about doing rankings is that you're doing it for all these different people in different leagues, and you have to kind of try and figure out how to broadcast that, you know, different guys have different like uses in different leagues. Like around 100, right where I have Brady Singer, I also have guys like Sean Manaea, even Chris Paddock is down there. I mean, Lance Lynn is only like 10 points away from Brady Singer. Like Michael Wacha's down there. Paul Blackburn, JP Sears are down there. So in that sort of, 100-ish, 100 to 120, I wanted to put guys that are useful, that you will pitch sometimes, that, you know, maybe streamers or maybe, you know, you have on your team that you only pitch half the time.
It's fair. Yeah, I think that's a tough part of the list for sure. I mean, Jameson Taillon just came back, and I look at him as like a would-you-rather versus Singer. I would take Jameson Taillon for sure if I had that choice. I think what we saw in the second half last year was real. I think Taillon was starting to realize that he had a better pitch mix making those adjustments than he did early on in the year when he was maybe trying to do a little bit too much. But that group, yeah, super tough because it's guys that they can hit a really tough stretch of schedule and you may have to cut them because you can't stash them for 2 or 3 weeks. That's the sort of vibe I get from guys in that kind of pitcher 90 to 110 range on most lists. Let's talk about Zach Littell for a minute. The results are great. The model is not on board. Mr. Lodum, analog over here, mm-hmm. I love him because 24.7% K rate early this season. 5.6% walk rate, showed excellent control last year, showed flashes of making those changes already, even on the fly with the Rays, and I think a full offseason to tinker some more can only be a good thing. Is it just the splitter that the model doesn't like, or is there something else that the model doesn't like about Zach Littell?
I mean, it's really his fastballs that it hates. And his fastballs haven't really performed all that well. That's what they really hate. But let's watch the splitter. Like,
I mean, he hides the fastballs. It's a nice
splitter.
That
looks pretty good.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's a little slow, right? That's the thing. It's not a high velo splitter.
Yeah. And so it lost like a couple ticks off of last year. It's shaped a little bit differently. The model says this year 87 stuff plus, but I looked and it says that last year was 112. So I think that, especially with a small sample changeup, I think you'll kind of want more context. And so I think if the splitter's performing well and also has had like good marks in the past and looks like that, I think there's to some degree you can say, okay, you know, the model is missing the fact that he has a good splitter. And so now you have to put him, let's say you have a good splitter he has a decent slider. Now you put him in the bin with people who don't have great fastballs, right? And then you start asking questions like, well, does he have the command to kind of not put the fastball somewhere bad when he's trying to hide it? Because he's definitely going to be a kind of guy that's trying to hide the fastball. It's not a good fastball. One concern that I have with him, just looking at kind of the top shelf numbers, the old school numbers, is that he has basically the same swing strike rate as last year. And for some reason, his 19.5% strikeout rate from last year has turned into a 24.7 for Zach Littell. Like, how do you do that? And so I went down to look at, oh, he must be getting some sort of extra swing somewhere. His chase rate, I mean, depending on who you're using, his chase rate is up a tiny bit and his swing rate is up a tiny bit, but it doesn't, I don't really understand how he's getting the more swing strikes. In fact, I would guess that it's something as silly as first pitch strikes. And I'm only saying silly because first pitch strikes are only something that you can get away with. If he's like throwing a lot of fastballs for first pitch strikes or sliders or something, it's only something you can get away with for a little bit before the scouting report changes. Like, what if he's just throwing a bunch of sliders in the middle of the zone on 0-0 counts, getting to 0-1, and everything's flowing better from there? Well, that's going to be filtering through all of the advanced scouting, and eventually some people are going to take some nice swings on those 0-0 sliders in the zone, whatever it is. I fundamentally see this as a fungible pitcher, and that's what the league has seen him as. You know, this is kind of a waiver claim guy. And I don't think that they've changed enough about him that I believe. So I'm kind of out on him.
I'm just like blindfold on. I'm like, I don't know why it's working, but I'm going to keep trying it until it doesn't, which is probably going to lead to some kind of like 2 1/3 innings, 8 runs, 9 hits blow up on my roster at some point, and probably in a matchup I wouldn't expect it to happen.
And hear all this. This is pretty funny. So I love Javier Assad. I have him 79. I hate Zach Titella. I have him 73. So
yeah,
it's all context. It's like, you know, if someone's trying to sell me Zach Littell in a trade as like a guy that I need or whatever, I'm gonna start looking at all the flaws, right? If I'm just looking at, you know, both of these guys, picking them up off the waiver, I'm looking at the schedule. That's how I put it. They're in the schedule dependent part of the rankings.
Fair. Okay. Yeah, in the 70s, I think you would look at that as something that could differentiate between two guys for a short period of time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you get injured, you don't want to wait for answers and options. That's why it may be time to explore the Nano Experience, a revolutionary treatment option designed to help active people get back to the lifestyles they love. Nanotechnology allows surgeons to see inside even the smallest joints and treat orthopedic conditions with a tiny camera and other nano instrumentation, all through a barely there poke hole incision. Wherever you've experienced an injury, whether it be a foot and ankle, hand and wrist, shoulder and elbow, knee or hip, nanoarthroscopy can be used to diagnose and treat your condition in an extremely, minimally invasive way. Don't wait to learn about the revolutionary Nano Experience and how it could help you or someone you know after an injury. Visit arthrex.info/theathletic. This is not medical advice and is not meant to be a substitute for advice from your physician. Talk with your physician about your health condition, potential surgical risks, and whether Arthrex products are right for you. Postoperative management is patient-specific and dependent upon your physician's assessment. Individual results will vary.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
One more riser we'll talk about. Paul Skeens jumps up a ton. This has to be timing, right? Like, what are they waiting for? Like, the Pirates are off to a good enough start where you would want the support in the rotation. Skeens looks like he's completely overmatching hitters at AAA. He's got a 57.4% K rate so far. They're using him in short outings just to keep more innings in the tank for later. That seems to be the pretty clear approach so far. 2 3-inning starts, 2 3-and-a-third-inning starts. So when do they flip the switch and see how it goes for him at the big league level?
Yeah, I have a feeling that it's any minute. I mean, right now they're barely holding this five-person starting rotation together. But Marco Gonzalez is shut down. And so, you know, if you look at it, they've been, they have a Quinn Priester start in there. You know, Bailey Falter has moved all the way in. But they seem to be kind of skipping the fifth spot in the rotation some. I don't know. You got Jared Jones in there and you kind of want to limit his innings, right?
Sort of, but not. I don't think you have to worry a lot about Jared Jones.
No, it's just that,
like, around off days and stuff, you can
right,
mess with
you
it
could
a little bit.
Use the off days as an off day for all your starters and not kind of make them kind of do a four-man rotation. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you need to sit Jared Jones on innings. I'm just saying that, like, it might be better if they had actually five starters. I'm not in on Quinn Priester. So they're like, there's basically an opening in the rotation for the Pirates. It's like, I think Paul Skeens is going to be up next time that opening comes through.
Let's see. He last pitched on the 18th, and they've been giving him extra rest between starts, too. He's pitched on the March 30th of March, 5th of April, 12th of April, and the 18th of April. So he's not even going every fifth day right now. I wonder if they would go to a six-man rotation temporarily and then take somebody out later.
I think you just keep Quinn Priester. If you can keep Quinn Priester on the roster and get Skeens on the roster, there's always a question of, like, is there somebody on this roster that they're trying to still evaluate and they don't want to drop yet? You know what I mean? So that could be, there could be somebody there. But I think you could just keep Quinn Priester on April 24th against Milwaukee. Quinn Priester's there. Give Paul Skeens that start.
They could. I mean, you think, okay, there's a few things. Like, they would probably debut him at home because a lot of fanfare. You want that. If they don't do it there, and that'd be on 5 days rest instead of four, which that'd be on the schedule they're on right now.
Yeah.
You'd be looking at a series in Oakland on the road. You probably wouldn't do it then. And they're back home against the Rockies the following weekend. So
maybe
it
May
would be
5th.
Like Sunday, May 5th would be Priester's turn against the Rockies, where he'd get a matinee in front of the home fans and a layup matchup, too. Like, that might be
so
the
I think
date
5th or 24th,
circled.
Either one. And I think, you know, you keep Quinn Priester on the roster, and you, if you're only getting three and a thirds out of Skeens in the minors, you're likely to get something like the Jared Jones thing that everyone's so mad about, where he's super efficient and gets through five innings with, you know, 70 pitches. And then, you know, you kind of maybe want Quinn Priester for the sixth anyway. So either way, I think you do it on the Quinn Priester day. And with Marco Gonzalez shut down and Quinn Priester, like, just being like, in a time when they have lost six in a row and have come back to earth. I mean, I think it all comes together April 24th against Milwaukee.
If it were up to me, that's what I would want to do, just because why not? Why not use the
Skeens
innings in the
against
big leagues?
Freddy Peralta?
Fun pitching matchup to watch.
Yeah,
2-8 in their last 10. Still 11-11 though, thanks to the fast start. But yeah, get out of that little tailspin. You got help, use it. And I don't know who they're really, like, really worried about losing, because they got enough guys in the bullpen with options. Like, Ronzi Contreras, Josh Fleming, and Bailey Falter are the three pitchers on the roster right now without options remaining. So,
and I think they do want to keep those guys, but actually Bailey Falter is in the rotation with Paul Skeens in the way that we put this together.
Right. Yeah. Priester could just go down because he's got options.
Yeah.
So that's an easy adjustment if they decide to make it.
Or Luis Ortiz, who's, you know, hasn't been great in the bullpen.
Yep. Give him some more opportunities to figure it out at Indianapolis for a little while. Let's get to where the money went. Just talking briefly about some of the things that we saw happen on the waiver wire over the weekend. Any big hits for you? I think you said Yoel Piamps was a well-executed bid, too.
Yeah, we won that one, 63-58. It's always nice when. And that, I think that just describes how excited I'm about Piamps is, you know, a real big closer that you think is going to be a closer all year goes for like 111, 120, something in there. We just thought that he could be the closer until Devin Williams comes back. I do believe Trevor Megill is a better pitcher. Actually, I do believe that. I believe Abner Ribe is a better pitcher. There's a little bit of a command issue there. But sometimes your closer is just the guy who's dependable, veteran, you know, just does the job until Devin Williams gets back, you know, and you don't put too much pressure on younger guys like McGill and Abner. And you need them anyway to strike out the middle of the order in the seventh, you know. So, you know, there's lots of different ways to get to a win. And I think that Piamps is someone that could just give us a month worth of saves. We put him on our main event team with Jeff Hoffman, and we're just trying to find a second closer without spending, you know, $120 on one. So that's where Piamps went. Other names that were kind of in that range, that were sort of like $20, $30, $40 relievers were Ryan Stanek, because Andres Munoz is just not pitching the ninth. It is weird. I got some pushback saying that that, you know, his stuff was down, and someone saying that no, he's just, you know, they're using him as a fireman or whatever. But the four seam, the stuff plus on Andres Munoz fastball right now is 85, and so he is not exactly what he was once. And so I think there is an opening in that Mariners bullpen, and I don't know who's going to step into it, because Stanek has the stuff, but he also has a 19% strikeout rate, and maybe Matt Brash comes back and steps into that role. Either case, you've got two guys with pretty good stuff in Munoz and Stanek who are walking the lineup, and that seems to be a tough thing to do as a closer. So Stanek was something that somebody that a lot of people, you know, took a chance on this weekend.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of interest in Hector Neris. He came up in the chat on Friday, and Neris's stuff was down a little bit compared to where it was last year. It's been a bumpy start of the year for him, but the reason people are interested in Neris is just because Adbert Elzelay, not the closer right now. It's more open than anybody would have thought for this stretch of April. At least I thought Elzelay was the guy, at least until a longer-term implosion. So revolving door for the Cubs right now in the ninth
inning.
They're
even using Mark Leiter late in games, and I just don't trust Mark Leiter's stuff late in games. So, you know, Yency Almonte is a guy who has the stuff, but he's a little bit more in that Stanek Munoz package where he's, you know, the command is pretty bad.
A few guys that we expected to see get picked up this weekend: Andy Páez, Willier Abreu, Landon Knack. They were pretty popular for reasons that we had previously outlined. Abreu's playing time, Páez being used like a everyday guy, at least for now, and Knack getting at least one more start. So I think maybe the interest in him is more of a streamer. Like, hey, let's throw him against the Nationals, and maybe he ends up becoming a streamer that sticks.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing like Grove and Stone like trying to hand games off to each other. I mean, they're struggling a little bit more than maybe people expected, given all the outlays this offseason. You've got Glasnow, you've got Yamamoto, and I think really the rest of that rotation is up for grabs. Maybe when Buehler comes back, you've got those three, and then Bobby Miller. When all four of those guys are healthy, those four, they get their spots. I still think that fifth spot is like, could be Nax. It could be Nax. It could be Groves. It could be Stones. You know, probably Stone is slightly the favorite, but there's stuff I like about Nax that I don't like about Stone. So I think Nax could just slide in there ahead of Stone and be the fifth starter, even when people are healthy. So I put some $30 bids on him. That's not breaking the bank. But it was way more than the secondary bids when I won them both times. So a little bit of regret that I didn't just, you know, tap that number down a little bit and save myself some money. But on the other end, I'm happy that I got a player I wanted.
Last name to throw at you before we go: Mitchell Parker, 12 innings, 2 earned runs, matchups against the Dodgers and the Astros last week, 12 Ks, no walks. Where did this come from?
I don't know. I mean, the command is good. And again, a good splitter. We've got a lot of guys with good splitters that are kind of confounding the model a little bit. At least this time, Stuff Plus says the splitter's his best pitch. It says his fastball is not very good. It says his curveball is not very good. So I'm just not going to go in deep on a national starter. Especially their home park is not really conducive to wins. He hasn't given up a homer yet. Of course, he's going to give up homers in Washington. So I don't really believe.
Yeah, I didn't throw any bids out there despite an excellent week. It's a great story so far. This combination of skills is something we've never really seen from Mitchell Parker at any level before. Usually control has been a problem for him. You go back to high A and double A, you know, the strikeouts were there, but the control was such a problem that you didn't really see a quality big league starter in the making. So fun story so far, but
I think Paez my big regret. I had a number that might have won him in a couple of leagues and then dropped it down. Little bit worried that, of course, there's the possibility that once Hayward is healthy, Paez goes back down. But with Hayward and James Outman, there are two spots in that outfield that Paez could really, you know, take as his own. And he's been playing center field. So that's why he got the big bid. And I had Willier Abreu win in one place. And then Gavin Sheets was available to me in TGFBI. I took him over Abreu. And my reasoning was I really needed power, and I believe Sheets will give that. He's also doing something very interesting where he's chasing less than he ever chased, swinging and missing less than he's ever swung and missed, and also hitting more fly balls than he's ever hit. So there's like a combination of forces here that could actually turn Sheets into the best version of himself, where he hits like 250 with, 25 homers this year. I think that's possible, and they're running him out there. He's their three hitter. That's one of the reasons why I decided I was just going to take him. He's their three and four hitter every night, and he's playing out there every night if it's in first or it's in the corner outfield. So this is, I think, a kind of a sneaky pickup.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think consolidating things he's done in the past all at once and adding those fly balls, it's at least an interesting enough thing in a small sample to take a chance on, because he's maxing out playing time. It's a bad team, but it's 100% playing time. That's hard to find.
They chose him over Colas. They chose him over, that guy that they traded for.
Fletcher?
Yeah, and the other guy.
The other guy. I know you're talking
Fletcher's
about.
Fletcher's up, so he's playing.
Deloach. Zach Deloach.
Yeah, Deloach. They chose at least trying Sheets for now over Deloach. And of course, Deloach or Fletcher or Colas could play their way past Sheets. But Sheets is kind of like a veteran at this point where if he puts it all together, they have him until 2028. Like, just, there could be, develop a league average outfielder out of Gavin Sheets and at least know that you have that going forward. There are enough years of team control left that's worth trying.
Still a skill that you could develop as an organization. It would be helpful. It will suit you well in the years ahead as you try and dig out of the current hole on the south side of Chicago. We're going to go on our way out the door. A reminder, you can email us, ratesandbarrels@gmail.com. You can join our Discord. The link is in the show description, or you can contact us on Twitter. Eno's at Enoceris. I'm at Derek Van Riper. The pod is at Rates and Barrels. We are back with you on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening.